Hey there, everybody. I just wanted to kind of check in with a quick bonus episode post-Worldcon, talking about Worldcon and some other things as well. Sorry, it's taken a while to get this out, but it was my son's birthday week, and we had two parties. So I won't bear the lead here. We didn't win. I think everybody knows that by now. It's the third time, so it's a sensation that I'm definitely used to, but none of my friends won either, and that kind of made it sting a little bit more. You know, I've looked at the statistics, and I haven't looked at all the nominating and that kind of stuff because it's not out yet, but it's maybe a little discouraging that I don't feel like we're gaining any ground year over year, though my personality and really the lack of the ability to be upset about most things for long means that I look at the 30-odd people who keep voting for the podcast every year, and I think it's great to have that kind of consistent support, so I'll be thrilled to make the shortlist any year that I make it. So seriously, if you're one of those voters, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. This was my second Worldcon, and it was practically in my backyard, so I hopped on the train, took the four-hour ride from Portland to Seattle, and was able to meet up with some folks that I'd been wanting to meet up with, which was awesome. When I arrived there, I arrived with a few hundred of my closest friends, so I took a piece of advice from my friend J.W. Wartick, who posted on the Nebulugo Book Club Discord, that if you find yourself in a line, make a friend. And that's not something I'm generally comfortable doing. I'll usually just keep my headphones in and put on resting leave me alone face. But I turned around and talked to a really nice brother and sister, I think Bill and Cindy. And we talked for, you know, almost 2 hours because we were in that line for a really, really long time. The shirt I was wearing also drew quite a bit of attention from nerds of a certain vintage. So I'll put a picture that I took of myself on the train, and you'll see why people of my age like it. So once I was in there, I wandered around and attended a couple of panels, but the highlight really was meeting up with friends new and old. So I just wanted to shout out a few people here. I got to hang out with J.W. Wartick quite a bit. We kind of wandered around a bit together, and we were able to go out and get dinner, and that was just a great time. It was a wonderful conversation, you know, the kind of person that you just have an easy friendship with from the get-go. And so that was really cool. I also had breakfast with Trish Mattson and Paul Weimer. I didn't get a photo, dang it. I did get a photo of JW, so I'll post all this stuff on social media and in the post here. I also got to chat with Dan Moran just a little bit. I had met him last year. He's been a guest a couple of times on the podcast. He's one of my favorite podcasters on The Incomparable, and I enjoy his fiction as well. So it was nice to get to chat with him a little bit. Another person I didn't get a photo of was Casella from A Meal of Thorns. We got to talk at the kind of Hugo social before the actual awards, and it was great chatting with him. Really nice guy. And so I'm hoping we get to hang out another time. One thing I did want to let you know that's kind of germane to that is I have kind of signed on to be part of the working group for the Translated Hugo initiative. I'll put a link in the show notes to that because I think you might be interested in that. And that'll be something that in future Worldcons we're going to be doing more work on, trying to get that going. I met up with the entire crew from Hugo Girl last year in Glasgow. It was just Lori and Kevin, but Haley and Amy showed up for this one, so it was really great to meet them. Amy had one of my favorite lines of the experience, one that I put in the overheard at the Hugo or at Worldcon in the Discord. She said, "I've never seen the bottom half of you." So I know there's a photo of all of us somewhere on social media, so I'll see if I can find it and include it with this post. I just briefly got to say hello to Juan San Miguel as well. He was really busy, and so we just kind of chatted for a minute or two while I was standing in a line to get into the Ink to Film podcast with Martha Wells, which was awesome. And like, I'm super happy for those guys that they made that kind of a score. And I loved how it was inspiring how well attended that was. And it was really, really cool. One of the things that I did, you know, at Worldcon, I'm not super, super comfortable, and just in crowds, I tend to lose myself a little bit and just feel like, what am I doing here? Who am I? You know, I get my imposter syndrome kind of kicks in, and I'm not sure why that is. You know, being at Worldcon, everybody who has a membership has a right to be there, but I feel like I'm there because I'm on the nominees list, and the nominees list makes me think I'm not worthy. So that's how it all works. But there was one event that I went to was called Speed Friending. It sounds like that would be way out of my comfort zone, and it kind of was. But one thing that helps me in large crowds is having a smaller group that I can hang out with. And in the speed friending, it was just, you know, several times doing that, just hanging out with strangers and talking about a prompt that they gave us. So that was fun. I got to moderate a panel on sports in science fiction and fantasy, and that was really a lot of fun. It was a little nerve-wracking, but the panel was well attended. People asked good questions, and one guy came up afterwards and said, "Thank you for doing this panel. You know, this is a topic that I'm really interested in, so I was glad to see it." I got to go to the Edmonton bid party for 2030, which was cool. Olav and Amanda are awesome. And Amanda, you're absolutely right about Cheezies being superior to Cheetos. We didn't get to hang out all that long there because there was a pub-style trivia quiz that I got to go to. And Amy and I from Hugo Girl went over to that. And Laurie and Kevin came a little bit later. But that was a really, really fun experience. I'd never done a trivia pub. I love trivia games. And so, we represented pretty well. We got second place. And that was a lot of fun. I'm going to be administering a quiz based on that to Phil and Colin on Science Fiction 101. So if you weren't there, you'll get a flavor of it if you listen to that. One of the other things that I did was I asked Colin to bring our handheld digital recorder with him that we used to record with all the time. But since I've upgraded my equipment, I handed that off to him to use for Science Fiction 101. But that allowed us to go around and just chat with a few people. It's very loud on the convention floor. I didn't do a very good job of pulling people aside. And so I had a little bit of usable audio, but you'll hear from some of it that there's some of the audio is not as useful and usable as I'd probably like. So the first interview that I did was with Jim Kling talking about the Endeavor Award, which is a Pacific Northwest award. So here's that audio. All right, I'm here with Jim Kling at the Endeavor Award booth at WorldCon.
Yes.
Hi, Jim.
Hi.
So tell me about the Endeavor Award.
The Endeavor Award has been around for 25 years. It is an award for Pacific Northwest authors, so those based in Oregon, Idaho, Alaska, British Columbia, or Washington State. So any member or any author who has written a book while they were, or published a book that was written while they lived in the Pacific Northwest is eligible. So any book can be entered. There's no fee for entering at all. And at Oricon every year in Portland, we announce the winner of the award, and they receive a $1,000 prize that goes with that.
Nice. Unfortunately, at that point, somebody started chatting quite loudly with the other guy manning the booth, so the rest of the interview was basically unusable. But it's a juried award, so if you're interested to know more or to participate, become one of the readers, then I will put a link in the show notes. One fun thing is that I actually ran into Jim's wife at the Edmonton bid party, and she was great to chat with as well. So over on Take Me to Your Reader, our most recent episode, it hasn't gone out yet as I'm recording this, probably won't be out by the time I release this, but the episode is about AI, artificial intelligence, which is based on a Brian Aldiss short story. And it happens that it is Aldiss's centenary year. I like the way the British say centenary. I think Americans should say that as well. I think I would normally say centenary, but centenary sounds better. And they had a small exhibit hosted by Brian Aldiss's daughter, Wendy. So she was kind enough to speak with Colin and me for a few minutes.
And so there is a booth at WorldCon all about kind of celebrating Brian Aldiss. And you are...
Yeah, and I'm his daughter.
You're his daughter.
So it is his centenary year this year. And he was such... he was a fan, but he came to a lot of cons as guest of honor. Mm. And so we thought, centenary year, we will come to Seattle 2025 and celebrate it.
Perfect.
With
him. And you have your son here as well.
And I have my son here as well, who's helping me out and doing most of the hard work.
Nice. So tell me about the space here. What do we have?
Yeah, so of course we've got one or two things that people can follow to listen to. So we've got some QR codes for people to listen to some stories if they don't want to, if they haven't got the books. And I'm a photographer. And when my father died, part of my way of coping with that was to photograph his things.
Yeah.
Started off with people saying, well, I'd be very interested to know what books he had, because he had a huge book collection. And then it just went on from there. And I spent a year photographing everything he had. And so this is a little sample of some of the items that he had. So we got a photograph here of the Hugo Award that he won in 1961. Yeah. Which was presented to him by Bob Silverberg, who's here at the convention. And the globe next to it is the Heliconia globe. So that is from the Heliconia trilogy. He did 2 years of research with scientists and ecologists and everyone before he even started writing. And so he had maps and he had the globe and everything as part of that. And we've got various piles of books that he had in his house. We have a t-shirt from a WorldCon in Brighton. and various other things that I thought that people will want to look at a science fiction convention. Mm-hmm. He had lots of other things that weren't to do with science fiction because he was an artist, he was a poet, but these are the items I brought because I thought they might be interesting here. And it seems that they have been, so yeah. People yeah. have been very taken with them. Yeah.
Yeah. So Colin and I don't have a lot of experience with his work, with Brian Aldiss's work. And we had just, I was telling you earlier, we had done an episode about Super Toys Last All Summer Long, and the other two stories as well, a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, and you mentioned Heliconia Spring. I think yeah. I've always said it Heliconia Spring, so I will correct my pronunciation
okay.
now. Is there another place that you would suggest that people start to get to know his work?
Yes, I think if you like to settle into really big, meaty, chunky books, then the Heliconia trilogy is the one to go for.
Okay.
A lot of people don't have the attention span, let's say, anymore. And so we have Hot House and Nonstop, which are very good. In a way, they're also sort of different worlds that have been created. There's a story, Greybeard, which is about a dystopian world when there are no more children in the world. A lot of his work... In fact, there's going to be an exhibition in Liverpool University Library next week as part of the centenary. You've got a whole lot of events going on. And that's all about him and the work in ecology and the things that he was talking about in terms of worrying about what was going to happen to the planet, you know, decades ago. And he was an exceptional short story writer. So actually, if what you want is a short story, there are quite a lot of collections yeah. of his of short stories. He edited a lot and brought other people's work to the fore as well, but he had a lot of collections of short stories. Yeah. yeah.
I understand that in the 1950s, I think, that he edited a book, a set of stories that was about science fiction tropes of the time in the 1950s.
You could well be right.
he did so many things.
I have to say, he did so many things in so many books. But I've had the pleasure of rereading or reading for the first time a lot of short stories because I've edited together a new collection which will come out at the end of the year called Hello Earth, Are You There? Which I think is appropriate given where he might be right now
right.
And is a line from one of the short stories.
Cool.
And I thought, yeah, that's fine. I'll read all these short stories quickly and choose oh my gosh. It's not just that there are so many. The collection could be, you know, three times as big. But
sure.
They're so interesting and they're so packed that actually I had to spend quite a bit of time sort of just processing what I'd just written, which is marvellous. And they sort of linger in the head as to, gosh, yeah, okay, that sounds good. That sounds awful. Oh, my gosh, how did he think of that? You know, all of those things. So
yeah.
I think he's got something for everyone, in all honesty, in terms of length of... He didn't stick just with one format. He liked to write what he was interested in writing.
Yeah.
So it's very varied, so people can dip into everything. And, you know, he wrote a Frankenstein book, Frankenstein Unbound,
right.
which became a Roger Corman film. And one of the images...
Yeah,
it's crazy, actually. One of the images here is the poster for the film.
Oh, I got
and that. And if you come over, I mean, look at the... look at
John
the cast.
Hurt.
John Hurt, oh, Ralph Julia, Bridget Fonda, Michael Hutchence, and Nick Brimble, who was the Frankenstein's monster.
I kind of unironically love Roger Corman films.
Oh,
so.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, terrific. Yeah. In fact, we had the pleasure of going to see some of the filming being done. That was a great experience.
Very cool.
Yeah.
To add that to our Frankenstein catalog.
Well, I mean, we're still kind of looking for an October story.
Yeah, true. Mm. The anthology that you're editing, when is that going to come out?
Well, it's December in the UK.
Okay,
now, I'm not entirely sure. I'm sure it will come out in America, but I'm really not quite sure on when that might happen.
Okay.
But I can let you know because I've got your details.
Yes.
Good.
Yeah, definitely. Reach out to us and let us know when that comes out. People want to look anything up online, where do they go?
So there is an official Brian Aldiss website.
Okay.
So that's .co.uk, Brian Aldiss.
Okay.
So they can look up, there's a full bibliography on there. So, yeah.
Okay, perfect. All right, thank you so much.
Great, will that do?
Yeah,
perfect. Excellent.
And after that, we were actually able to also go over and talk to the fine folks manning the Center for Ray Bradbury Studies booth. Obviously, our mutual friend Phil is involved with that as well. But it's always fun to talk to other Bradbury enthusiasts. And just to keep it real here, I'll leave the bloopers in right at the top because I had a terrible time with getting my tongue tied right off the jump. We do get a little bit of crosstalk kind of halfway through because I think I switched to talking to Carrie to talking to Coy. And I think Carrie then started chatting with Colin or someone else. And so there's a little bit of crosstalk there. But I think the information that Coy was giving me about Festival 451 was definitely worth keeping because it's coming up in September. So here's that audio.
My wish is for you to let me record you for this podcast.
Yes, exactly. So, So I'm here with Colin and also with Carolyn Cooper from the Center for Ray Bradbury Studies. So hi, Carolyn.
Hi.
Or Carrie. I said you said people call you Carrie.
People call me Carrie.
How did you become involved with the center?
I got involved, I guess it must have been 2021. I wanted to do an editing certificate program. And the Indiana University, yes. Indianapolis, mm-hmm. had a program that allowed for textual editing with Ray Bradbury's collection. And I thought it was just more interesting to do it in an environment where you could actually be hands-on in a collection. I love science fiction. Mm. So that's how I got started. I met Dr. Jonathan Eller and Dr. Jason Aukerman. Dr. Eller founded the Center for Ray Bradbury Studies, and then when he retired, Jason Aukerman took over. And they sort of convinced me that in addition to doing the certificate program, I should do a PhD in American Studies. And so that's how they've managed to keep me this long. Center for the Ray Bradbury Center is my assistantship.
So did I misname you and not call you Dr. Carolyn?
I am not doctor yet.
Not yet.
Still in progress.
CBD.
Yes.
Nice. And so what is the center doing here at WorldCon?
At WorldCon, so we love to come out to cons. Bradbury liked to go. Science fiction convention, Comic-Con. We find that it's a really great place to connect with people who know his work or wouldn't necessarily. I'm amazed how many times I come across people who don't know his work, especially in a place like this.
Mm-hmm.
It is surprising. But we like to, you know, I guess, as Jason would put it, spread the gospel of Ray Bradbury.
Yeah.
But I find that his storytelling is so compelling,
yes.
And it's so accessible, and it's still so prescient. So we want to be able to basically express how meaningful it continues to be. Mm-hmm. And we feel like we've been given a gift, the center has. We have artifacts from Ray Bradbury's LA office, so we've got his office recreated in our space. We're a museum. Mm-hmm. We have archive of about 150,000 pages of incoming correspondence, published and unpublished manuscripts. So we have that archive that people can do scholarship. I'm working right now with Maurice Broaddus to put together an anthology, which would be contemporary authors in science fiction and speculative fiction, poetry. That would be this kind of, new up-and-coming generation of really talented authors that have been influenced by Bradbury's work.
Nice.
So
before we started recording, you mentioned something about a move that the center is trying to do.
Yes.
Can you tell us more about that?
Absolutely. We are currently in a corner of a university hall that has four floors of active plumbing above it. And so that makes our space not very archivally safe.
Yes. In fact, there was a collection, I think, on the East Coast that just had a flooding problem.
I heard that.
Yeah.
Yes. And so
it's the archivist's nightmare.
It is. Yeah. It is absolutely the archivist's nightmare. So we are in the process of raising money. We'll be starting a pretty full-on year-long campaign to do to raise a significant amount of money to really safeguard the collection. We have the opportunity to move into a newer space, bigger space. It'll triple our footprint, which will allow us to really build out the museum portion of it. in the way that we would like to, and mm-hmm. it would be protected.
How about like a Ray Bradbury presidential library style?
Wouldn't that be amazing?
That'd be awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, and then hopefully we'll raise enough to also hire a full-time archivist or collections manager. Most of our staff is part-time, volunteer, grad student like me. Our director, it's, you know, basically he gets a course release to run the center. He's an educator, a professor at the university. Nice. So it's a real labor of love for us. And perfect. Yeah, and so raising that money will help us not only move the collection to a safer space, but also bring on staff that would allow us to continue to safeguard it and do the outreach that we love to do so much.
Nice. Can you provide us with where people should go to actually donate if they want to help with the effort?
Sure.
It doesn't have to be verbal. You can give me something and I can include it.
Great. That would be amazing.
Yeah.
So you could follow us on Instagram or Facebook or Blue Sky.
Okay.
We have a Substack that is where we send out our newsletter from.
Okay.
Nice. I forgot about that.
Yeah, oh, we're going to get you too.
So.
The Substack is at Ray Bradbury Center. That's a good place to find us.
Okay, so I'm Coy.
Yes.
Coy Lloyd.
Yes.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you today?
Yes. So how did you become involved with the center?
Oh.
Are you a grad student as well?
I am also a grad student. Oh, man. It's a long story. Is that okay?
Go for it.
Okay. So I am a film scholar, and in like in Indianapolis, it's a small city, and so they were doing their second festival 451 Indie, which is a literary festival, but they also it's about literacy. That means media. We're talking like theater. We're talking film. We're talking books. All of it. They were going to do a panel on Lon Chaney and his relationship with Ray Bradbury, or Ray Bradbury's parasocial relationship with him, because he was a fan.
Lon Chaney from The Wolfman.
That's right. Yes, the man of a thousand faces.
Yes.
I'm a horror expert, so to speak. My name was recommended. I had a tour. They reached out. I said yes. They gave me a tour of the Ray Bradbury. I fell in love. It's because of the Ray Bradbury that I'm a PhD student. They're like, do you want a PhD? I said yes. And they're like, okay, let's work on getting you that PhD. So now I'm in school, and now I'm because of the Ray Bradbury Center. And now I volunteer with them because why wouldn't I? They're dope.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Right?
Yeah. I love behind you, there's a poster of Something Wicked This Way Comes, which I maintain is one of the greatest movie posters of all time.
It's so gorgeous.
Yeah.
And it totally captures the, like, spooky darkness. And it's, like, kind of, like, I want to say there's something sweet about it. And nostalgic. And it does all of that. All in that image. And I'm really excited that we're going to screen it this for this Festival 451 Indie this year in September. So, like, yeah.
Tell me more about that, because I don't think I've heard of this.
Oh, the festival?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so the festival, this will be our fourth annual Festival 451 Indie, obviously. We got the title from the book. It's a literary festival that celebrates all forms of literacy. So we are celebrating Ray Bradbury's love of, I want to say media, but I also want to say like storytelling.
Yeah.
So he was a huge fan of theater, like performance theater. He was a huge fan of film, huge fan of like books, obviously.
Right. Well, he wrote for all of that, right?
He showed
wrote for theater, wrote for television, wrote for movies.
He showed it. And that's what we want to elevate that, also bring in new voices that are in the city and outside the city, and promote it as far and wide as we can.
So that's in Indiana?
Yes.
Okay, in Indianapolis?
Yes.
Okay, and when is it? Is that September?
Yes, the whole month of September we have like a one event like per week.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Really cool.
All right. It was great to meet you.
You
thank
too.
You so
good to see you again.
Yeah.
I saw, because we met last year. Yes.
Oh, did we?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
In Scotland.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you so much for coming back.
Yeah.
So there was the information in there about raising money to move into a newer space at Indiana University. And so, again, I've got a link if you want to back that campaign. Then you can do that. And if you just want to follow them on social media, I have those links as well. Okay, I think that's kind of a wrap for WorldCon. It was a fun experience. My son came up for the Hugo Awards and was there with me. It was an interesting experience for him. He found that he has a certain level of nerdery, enjoying comic books and some science fiction as well, and films, but maybe not to the level of being a con person. So that's fine. That's totally fine. But it was fun to have him there for the ceremony. So before I sign off here, and I know I haven't really been going very long, this will still be a short episode. I just wanted to get a little vulnerable here and say I have really been struggling with podcast reading lately. I think somewhere in my mind, Queen is playing I Want to Break Free. I have other things that I'd like to be doing, and I'm seriously considering kind of suspending the current podcast model for a while, because I've been doing the kind of 4-month model where I do 2 regular episodes and 2 zoomed out episodes. And I'm starting to run out of the zoomed out episodes. And so I think once I have kind of finished the ones that I have at least tentatively scheduled, I'm probably going to stop doing those for a little while. They tend to be a little bit more involved. I thought they were going to save me more time than they do in terms of reading, but they end up just increasing the amount that I read. And there's some other miniseries that I'd really like to do, and I kind of want to just start sliding those in more regularly. Because, the idea, the mission of the podcast was for me to become a better read science fiction fantasy fan. So I'm just going to tell you what my idea is. Most of the science fiction and fantasy that I enjoy is science fiction. There's some fantasy here and there. I've enjoyed all the fantasy winners on the Hugo's list. There's a couple of science fiction winners I didn't really love. But I'm still not super attached to the genre of fantasy. And when I look back, and I was talking with Casella about this, I've talked to a couple of other people about it, is a lot of the more young adult-focused stuff tends to be fantasy. And there's a lot of people who were hooked on fantasy from a very young age. And I'm surprised that I wasn't, because I so loved the Prydain books. And so I'd kind of like to start a mini series that I'm going to call Foundational Fantasy, where I want to have a guest on and kind of like a regular episode, more or less. But the titles under consideration are things that drew people to the genre. And I'm not opposed to this being science fiction as well, but I want to focus more on fantasy because I feel like some of those early books are fantasy. So if that's something that interests you, do reach out to me. Let me know what was it that hooked you on fantasy, and maybe we'll get something on the books. I'm going to try not to burn myself out doing this. And so I do want to be kind of mindful of where I'm at in terms of getting close to being burned out on podcasting, because the last thing I want to do is give myself a whole bunch of extra editing to do, because that's the washing the dishes part of podcasting. That's the eat your vegetables part of podcasting. So yeah, one thing I do want to say though to people before I start, really moving on a new series in the podcast and dropping things that I was doing before, it's entirely possible, probable even, that there are a couple of people out there who have reached out to me about covering a book and we haven't really followed up. And so if you're one of those, please reach out to me again, and let's make sure that we do follow through on that before I start going off on my own to do something else, because I don't want to leave anybody hanging. I still would like to eventually read through all the Nebula winners, and so, I don't want to cease all regular operations of the podcast. I just want to pull back in a couple of areas and focus on some interests that I have at the moment. I don't have any solid plans to go to the LA Worldcon, though my son and I have been looking and we noticed that both the Dodgers and Angels will be playing games in proximity to where the convention is going to be around that same time. And we're big baseball fans and we love to collect stadiums, and we haven't been to either of those. So if I end up on the shortlist again, I'll definitely make my way there. I'd like to, if the Translated Hugo Initiative is running any booths or panels, I want to help out with that as well. So very likely that I'll be there, especially if I end up on the shortlist. So don't be discouraged if you're somebody who's been voting for the podcast for years and you're like me and you're like, dang, I wish more people would vote for it. I appreciate the support. Let's just keep doing what we're doing. And if you want to help me promote the podcast, great. That's something that I'm pretty bad at. And it was funny. There was a conversation that I wasn't privy to, but both Ethan and Amy from Hugo Girl, sorry, Ethan, my son, mentioned to me that that Hugo Girl was saying, we think your dad isn't confident enough, isn't the kind of person to be cold-blooded enough, right? He's too nice. And they doubted that I voted for myself in the Hugos. And they were both wrong. Of course I did. I still would have been thrilled if A Meal of Thorns or Hugo Girl won the FanCast Award. But I'd love to win myself as well. Okay, I think that's going to do it. So thank you so much for your support over the years. I remember the thrill that I saw the first time that I saw myself on the long list. And so being on the short list 3 years running is really outstanding. And it's an absolute thrill and it's an honor. And thank you so much for everybody who helped me get there. All right, a regular episode will be coming out soon as well. Bye, everybody.